Blog
Hello, everybody.
Talk Radio.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, good evening, everybody. How we doing?
Good.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, we just got this in, and what I want to do is I want to play this song. We just got this in. This is by Mike P, the big homie out of...
Now, you met that guy yet.
No, you haven't met him yet?
No.
All right, well, I think you'll enjoy this.
My first time, man. What's... All right, let me hear it first before I say anything.
I think you'll enjoy this.
I try to be open-minded.
For everybody listening, we got a couple things going on. We're going to play this song, and we're here.
Remember, if you're not part of our show, there's no show, everybody. You got to be part of us, so...
Listen. Enjoy...
This is a motorcycle thing, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll make sure. You know, hippy-dippy stuff.
No, this is a motorcycle stuff.
All right. What's it called? Sounds of Silence or something? Because
no,
I ain't hearing nothing here.
It's coming.
I
it's got to load
it.
It's got to load up.
That's the way you had it, you know? Okay.
No, it's got to load up.
All
right. That right there. There we go.
This guy got a motorcycle.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I don't give a fuck. Fresh out of jail. Jump from a jumper with my drag pipe. Bitch, tail rolling. In the wind, I be blowing. Bitches on my chocks, on my dick is when they hold it. Big ballin', money stay growing. Hitting hard as fuck for the title that I'm holding. Fuck with me, and you know you're getting paid. Baby mama tripped because my pad just got raided. Oh well, I still don't give a fuck. I'm a squirrel in the world trying to bust a nut. So fuck yeah, motherfucker, keep on bailing. Gangsta gangsters, what the fuck they yelling? My lady think I'm crazy, but hey, that's true. I've been fucking up fresh, but I can hear her too. Right through. I don't give a fuck. Fuck.
this music. I have to tell you, this ain't no plastic vanilla ice. Without knowing the guy like that, he sounds like he's living on the street. I like the references to the high bars. I like the references of the pipes hitting the streets. You know, you told the guy he has a motorcycle. I got a little more research. I think he's a real deal. I don't know.
It is the real deal.
I need a little more research on this, but I like all the motorcycle references. It tells me the guy has got the good connection. The street people.
Yes, he does.
You met this guy, a friend of yours?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't met him yet, so I'm just up giving from, my observations.
Up from the valley.
Is he a valley guy?
He's happens to be a club member, Bill.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that either, but still, I don't change my opinion on that. I think the boy's got street credibility.
Yes, he does.
So there's no one of those rappers in the studio just making stuff. This guy's living the lifestyle, so...
Yes, he is.
What's his name again, please?
Mike P.
Mike P.
The big homie.
The big homie, well.
And you can get that...
I'm going to check that a little bit more.
Yeah, I did put the... I put the link up in the chat room, Bill. I'll put it up there again. But it's Mike P, the big homie. Here's the link going up in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put up who it is. Not going to load. Anyway, it's the name of the song. I'll type that in there. Is
I think we...
Mike P... Yeah. The big homie. And the name of the song is I Don't Give a Fuck.
I think we figured that part out, though. That was a good refrain throughout the movie. But I like the way it was produced. I like the quality of the music. That means an awful lot to me. And again, the fact is the boy's talking about what he knows about.
That's right.
He's not talking about something out of his line of worth. So, yeah, you know, I'm not here to judge things, but I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then, you know, before we get to that couple of things you want to talk about, Bill, I want to let you know I found another one of the government things. It seems... Now, you're going to enjoy this one.
Oh, good. I need a good one.
Okay. It seems that the Fed spent $800 in the latter part of last year on economic stimulus money they sent to Africa. Do you know what for?
$800?
$800,000.
Oh, $800,000.
In actuality, Bill, it was $823,200 of economic stimulus money in funds, okay, by a UCLA research team to teach uncircumcised African men how to wash their balls after having sex.
No.
This genitalia washing program, Bill, is a part of a larger $12 million UCLA study examining how to better encourage African men to undergo voluntary HIV testing and counseling. However, only the penis washing study received money from the economic stimulus law. The washing portion of the study is set to end in 2011.
Truly, how you find these things are amazing to me. I'm all for health and I'm all for safety, but I'm not for giving $800,000 to another damn country when Americans are trying to get some dinner
on
their plate.
Well, Bill, it's not the fact that they just gave almost $825,000 away. It's the fact that they gave them $825,000
to wash their penis.
How to wash their balls and their dick.
We got to take care of our own. You want to send... Oh, this is crazy. You know what? I got to say, America, I love this country. My government, wake the fuck up. You cannot justify to us why you spent that money.
Nope.
I'm having a hard time understanding why you're sending rockets to outer space even. We need to take care of our home. But and please tell me you don't have any pictures of how this thing is done, okay? Please tell me you don't have
no.
that. No. Okay, then I'll feel better with that now. Now, have you been anywhere and heard this guy, Big Mike, the big homie in L.A.? Has he been in any clubs or anything? You go a lot more clubs than
he's
I
going,
go.
He's going, they'll be at the Key Club, Bill. Also,
the Key Club,
yeah, also,
Sunset.
Right. Also, I've seen him at the clubhouse.
Oh, okay, well.
The last time I saw him, they were so good and so loud, they fried the fucking amp, Bill.
I don't think the guy needs to have loud. No, I think that the quality of the music is good. And when I like loud music, that usually tells me the band's not that good.
Right.
You and I did an event last weekend, and the bands weren't that good.
No.
I'm not going to say where it was, but the bands weren't that good.
No.
And I'm not going to be lying to you. You know what?
They saved the last one till the end.
Yeah, and I thought that band was good, and everybody was dancing, having a good time. Unfortunately, it was time to go home.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to say the names of any bands at all there, but, you know, we were here good and bad. I'm going to be honest about it. That wasn't that good. I think that Big Mike, the homie, I think he doesn't need to go loud music. I think that the quality of the music is there. I think the vocal connections are solid.
Mm-hmm.
I would like more of the refrain. He's talking about the, what was the refrain about? Hit the pipes, what was that refrain? I can't remember. He's saying that several times throughout the song. I can't remember now. Some of the exhaust pipes hitting the ground or something like that. That's the type of connection I want to hear.
Right.
I want to know that this guy is involved in the motorcycle community. He's involved in living day-to-day, and he's not being plastic. And I think it's going to have a good future.
Yes.
One of these events, we got to catch up. Maybe I can swing on by. Are we going to Hollywood or anything recently? What month is that?
This month. I got one. There's one tonight. There was one last night. There's going to be one on the 27th. Then, let's see, in April.
April's tough for me. I got runs every week. I got to go.
There's one Saturday night on the 2nd, and then on the 9th, we'll have our Paralyzed Vets run.
Yeah.
And then, there's a lot of things
going on. Well, there's a lot of stuff going next. So what about May? Slip into May. What's going on? Anything Hollywood May? March, April,
not confirmed.
May? Oh, okay.
Not confirmed.
Right, yeah, I'm afraid next month, I don't have a free weekend anywhere, I think.
And then this other one I want to update you on, this is a little update on Andy. And what happened was Channel 10 in Australia is making a miniseries, and it's called The Bikie Wars, Brothers in Arms.
Yeah, when they say bikey, that means bikers to us. That's the way they call them.
Right.
They're not being derogatory. That's what they call them.
Right.
Bikers here are bikies over there. It's just the way of semantics. Don't get upset about it.
No. So what it is I talked to Andy through the email, and what it is they commissioned him. Remember I told you he got approached by a couple of guys to go to Australia and
documentary? Yeah, we talked about that.
This is it.
Yeah, all right.
And, thanks, bro, I'm on it. This is Andy sending it to me. Thanks, bro, I'm on it. I have worked as a lead biker on the series these people have produced. And I wrote to him, hey, good for you. Also, no bites on the stolen bike you sent me the info on yet. But it's coast.
You didn't tell me about the new stolen bike?
Yeah,
I didn't mention that.
Yeah, I told you. Told you last week.
Do we know the guy's bike was stolen or what?
No, it's a friend of Andy's. Oh, he's one of his neighbors. But, yeah, they stole it right out from the underground parking, and it's a Kawasaki Hayabusa.
Suzuki Hayabusa.
No, Suzuki. Yeah.
Suzuki Hayabusa.
Yeah.
Where the bad men ride.
And,
not me, but you know.
Right.
I get respect for Hayabusa. Believe me, anybody can ride Hayabusa. I have respect for him. Wouldn't personally own one, but again, you got to respect that. That's the fastest thing I've ever seen in my life. I have a hardcore friend of mine, a club in San Diego. I don't want to say his name or anything. He rides during the daytime. He's got his club patch, and he's got a beautiful bike. Nighttime, around 12 o'clock, takes all the stuff off, black leather jacket, full black helmet, and he's on the freeway with his Hayabusa. And he travels at speeds that are just unbelievable. Just because we have a Harley, I don't mean to imply that we are better than anybody. Because obviously some of the Japanese motorcycles are fantastic. It's my choice to have a Harley.
Mm-hmm.
But I respect anybody that wants to ride anything at all.
Anything. Even the guys in China, Bill.
No, I'm not going to respect anything Chinese at all. Don't even start shit with that now, goddammit. You know, out there, people, I have nothing against the Chinese people, as I have nothing against the North Koreans. Your government is no good. No good.
Well, Bill, we've got in the chat room right now.
General MacArthur in there? Because I know what he's saying about them. We've got to fight them someday. Might as well do it now.
Yeah, we got the Crazy Russians. Crazy Russian is in. We got another Evil. We've got RoboDog.
Where's Crazy Russia from? What area do you know?
Boston.
Boston, okay.
RoboDog, I think, is upper New York. And Nado Vivo. That might be Evil E. I don't know. But, no, go ahead. You had something you want to talk
about? Yeah, I do. And I found it. You know, Amigo, we're coming in the summertime again, and this is kind of important, and I think you'll appreciate my twist on this here. Summertime riding in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Are we prepared for it? I think most people are not prepared for it. So I want to plagiarize a little bit from Friction Zone. I want to thank Pat LaCara, registered nurse, for her insight on this here. We who live in the desert down here, and even though California's next to the ocean, we're mostly desert, we who ride in Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, the stinking heat is unbelievable. We don't prepare for it, so I want to talk about that. When the summer heat just around the corner, it's a good time to look back on the condition known as hypothermia, a raising of the body's core temperature as a result of the body's inability to shed heat. I want to make this a little, I'm going to condense this. I don't want anybody going through all this stuff here. When it comes to heat-related illness, the human body can be compared to a water-cooled motorcycle traveling in hot weather. If there isn't enough water in the radiator, or even if there is, if the bike is climbing up a steep hill, there's potential for overheating. The extent of overheating and damage is severe. You lose a little bit of your feeling. You lose a little bit of your consciousness. You could pass out on me. We've all heard horror stories about pouring cold water in a hot, dry radiator. Heat-related illnesses are very serious and yet always preventable. Now, I don't want to make this so boring, cut and dry, but we have a lot of Vegas runs. We're going to be in Palm Springs, Screwdriver. We're going to be in Laughlin. How often do you and I see somebody blasting through the desert, some guy in a wife-beater shirt? He'll make it to Vegas. The next day, he can't move his arms.
Nope.
We see beautiful women in bikini tops blasting through the desert. I think it's sexy as hell, especially the big boobs. I love that. But the next day, you're going to pay. The desert is not something that you can treat lightly. You need to wear a long sleeve shirt, T-shirt, a button-down. I don't care what it is with that. You need to put some type of protection, whatever SBU you need, on your face. People don't wear gloves. I see you people out there. Put protection on your hands. This desert riding, every year you and I see it.
Right.
This tears everybody up here. Now, the most common is called heat exhaustion, which occurs as a result of excess sweating without replacement of the lost fluids. You're sweating. The liquid inside you is leaving. You have to replenish it. Eventually, the body's cooling system doesn't have enough water left to keep its core temperature. It literally becomes exhausted trying to dissipate the excess heat. The body temperature between 102 and 104 is indicative of heat exhaustion. I see people going on the road down there. They're kind of swerving a little bit to one side and the other side because they're beginning to lose consciousness. Now, I'm not saying this. I'm boring. I want to share this with you. I'm saying this because we see people crash on the desert.
Guy just crashed the other day. Had a heart attack.
Heart attack. That's not heat exhaustion. That's just sick, you know. But if you're riding in the heat and you feel weak, tired, anxious, nauseous, you're suffering from heat exhaustion. We were coming back from Arizona a while ago, and I found a guy from New York. And what happened was I went alongside him. He was at a BMW, and I slapped him in the head hard. He chased me for about 3 or 4 miles, and I pulled off underneath the bridge and all this eagle bullshit. Yeah, what are you doing? What did you mean for and all that? And I said to him, why did you let me get up and hit you? I said, do you have any idea that you were weaving all over the desert? He said, no, I'm from New York. I'm not used to the heat. He could have gone down. He could have killed himself. Now, what I want you to understand there is this is very important. And we're going to bring Tar Cheney on next here, brother. Hang on there. Hang in there, brother. Okay, I'm going to cut through a lot of this here because I don't want you to read it all. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up now. Key factors identify fluid, intact, heat, stroke is a victim whose skin is very hot to the touch. Profuse sweating may be present. Now, this is your signal to be vigilant in walking for the signs of heat-related illness in yourself and others in the group. Even if the humidity isn't high, when it's hot, taking freaking breaks and drinking plenty of cool water, even if you're not thirsty going across the desert. Todd, you can talk about this a second, too. You and I do a lot of desert riding.
Oh, yeah.
Soda, coffee, tea, and alcohol, that's not good for you. It's a diuretic. Stop drinking that soft drinks at the gas stations. They also increase urination and ultimately hasten to dehydration. For those of you who ride in T-shirts and shorts, don't do it. It's a bad idea, one of which it speeds up the loss of body fluids through evaporation. Best thing to do is bring extra water. Keep yourself covered up. And I want to wrap this up here with, okay, screwdriver. Prevention is the real key to heat-related illness. Water is the key to prevention. Once you feel thirsty, you're already low on fluids. The best indication of proper fluid levels is urine output and color. This is important for you,
correct.
Okay? A small level of dark-colored urine is not a good sign. Dark urine is concentrated, which means your body is low on water and trying to conserve its supply. Strive for large amounts of light-colored urine. Now, Todd, I know you're out there. I know you're all excited. So let me repeat that again. Dark urine is not a good sign, brother.
Well, actually, I've been here drinking a bottle of water
for you,
okay? Your whole conversation, hydrating before I go teach class. So I'm
exactly.
Hydrating like you're saying to do.
We learned that just a little bit about your teaching class about that same thing. Motorcycle riding, you and I talk about going through the desert. We've been there many deserts. We've seen what the desert does for people who are not prepared. Talk a little bit about teaching your class and how that relates to it also, Todd. Oh, sorry, Todd, please.
Well, kind of a big jump, guys. Actually, I'm going to teach a little kickboxing.
Yes, Todd, right, introduce who you are, sir, please, and tell us what you're referring to, your teaching of class.
Oh,
yourself
my name is
a
Todd
plug.
I'm a bail agent, and I teach Muay Thai kickboxing, but I teach it to the style of MMA fighting, and I teach MMA fighting at Black Line Fight Group, which I'm one of the owners. And hydration
is very
important.
And what town is that in, Todd?
Carlsbad, California.
Okay. Todd, can these people go online and get information about the kickboxing first? Can we put that up? Do you have a website or something so people can look at that while we're talking?
Yeah, so it's called blacklinefightgroup.com. And we teach Thai boxing, and we teach MMA fighting, and we do gi, jiu-jitsu, and non-gi. And then we have a kettlebell strength conditioning class. It's
a kettlebell.
To the general
public. I've seen it. I haven't touched one of them. They look out of my range.
It's actually a core training. It's pretty good. It teaches you balance and core training. So it's a different way of working out, but it's much more effective for the fight world.
Okay, so when somebody comes into your class, and we're talking about preparing for the lessons, fluids and all that, how does that relate to a little bit, sir?
You just ask the person, have they trained before, and what kind of training have they done, or have they had none? And then you'll have, like, street fighters come in, and they tell you how bad they are and how they've done only street fights. So you take that and you throw that out the window. And then you have the people who just want to get a workout. Then you have other people who want to do amateur fighting. And it's up to my decision-making after all these years of doing it to figure out how I want to pair them up and what I want to let them do. But I have to kind of, like, watch them before I let them lose. And I did that for a few weeks, and I see where they're going, and I'll take it from that point. And the gym's open to the general public, but we train a lot of amateur and professional fights for like Strikeforce, UFC, you know, King of the Cage, and other things like that. Then you have the local scrappers, and you kind of want to weed those people out because they're not good for the class. People can get hurt.
Todd, if I can ask you a question. MMA is a cross-selection of many types of fighting skills. And without saying the person's name or anything, can you tell a short story about that karate gentleman, the black belt in karate, who came to your studio thinking he was king of the hill?
Yeah. In California, if you fight for money, you're classified as a professional. So you have to go through the athletic commission and all that stuff. So this young black gentleman, very ripped out, was wanted to fight in the UFC, and he's never fought. So what he wanted to do is fight a guy named Dominic Cruz. And we put it under YouTube under the Ninja. Ninja fights Dominic Cruz. And we told him we can't trade money or anything because this is just a sparring session. And that's against the law in the state of California. So I asked him what his resume was, and he told me he studied the ninja arts, and he's proficient in Israeli combat fighting in the ninja arts. And I was like, really? I didn't know there was any black ninjas, but that's unusual for the Japanese. So we paired him up, and the boy decided, we actually called Dominic off. He could have really hurt this guy, but the guy got owned pretty bad. But So the first round was just takedowns and jujitsu. The next round was strikes, kicks. And I would say it was over with in the longest 30 seconds of this guy's life. So if you ever want to watch it, just type under YouTube, Dominic Cruz versus a ninja. It'll explain itself. So that's another thing where you have all these people who want to come and make a name for themselves, and they haven't trained. They don't want to dedicate. They just want to scrap. They usually always lose, especially the higher you go up the pecking train. It's changed. So that was pretty good humor.
This karate guy was a one-trick pony, and going up against a mixed martial art, this is a man that's got many, your organization, you teach many different styles of offense and defense. Is that correct?
You have to. Yeah, we teach law enforcement, the government, you know, and they all come in. We train them privately, not to the general public. Yeah, but we train them all. So we see it all. You have to use everything. That's the reason why it's called mixed martial arts. You mix it all up.
I've noticed that when I'm down to your studio that many of these gentlemen and ladies that have got skills and all that, the more they get more skills, the more they become more peaceful. They become more comfortable with each other. It's not a matter a loud, boisterous drunk in the bar. Your guys seem to be, the more skills they have, the more they become confident with each other. Is that correct?
Actually, I'm watching this right now, Todd. This guy's built like me. It beats the shit out of this guy, huh?
Yeah. Take an old $135 guy and turn him into a nice 240 guy who's trained is kind of entertaining. But, yeah, the more you train, the more you get more confident with yourself. But you just not training, the more you fight. And the more you fight, you discover your shortcomings and your positive and your negative. And it's a fleeting feeling. So age will sit in with you in time, and all your skill will diminish in timing. But the more you fight, Bill, like you said, the more passive you become. If you don't do that and you're a hothead and just a bad person, eventually you're going to get owned. And when you get owned, the interest rate comes up higher. So you learn a lot about yourself in the fighting. That doesn't make you a better person than the next guy. You just learn something else that the general public usually doesn't get to experience.
Yeah.
I want to point out that my nephew was down there training with Todd. Well, my nephew's never going to be an MMA fighter, but he was training with him. And his fight that he had, or the exhibition he fought there, he pretty much was dominated by the other fighter for two rounds. That's being very kind to my nephew, too. And I said to him as his ringman, you don't have to go out for this third round. I can throw the towel and you can walk away. However, if you can get through the fear, get through the pain, and when the bell rings, get up and go out and fight this man. This will be a watershed mark in your life. Later in life, when you're worried, when you're afraid, you can say, hey, I was afraid that day I was fighting, but I got up and I went out the third round and I fought. And I think you'll agree with me. My nephew fought better in the third round than he did the first and second round. Is that right, Todd?
Yes, because he got more comfortable. He was terrified in the beginning.
Yep.
And we trained hard for the fight. The other guy was definitely more trained, and I told him not to kill Steph and give him an experience of life, but make him earn it and make him feel it. But Steph started picking up towards the end, and like you said, it's a watershed moment. You can never take that away from Steph. He trained for the fight. He was definitely confident when he got there, but once the door closes, there's no more team, there's no more we. It's me and the other man. There's no more team here. The game is on, and then the people watch, and that's totally changing. So Steph picked it up, and Steph is, probably thinks about it to this day. But it's like
he thinks
said,
about that an awful lot. The fact he didn't back out, he stayed in, and he faced his fear. And, again, I give a lot of respect and thanks to you. And I talked to the other fighter who was much more superior. He could have, as you said, taken my nephew's head off. But the fact is, my nephew stayed in, and he fought to the end. That makes so much to him. That gave him confidence like you'll never know, Todd. I know you gave a lot of training to him, all your guys did down there, but the fact that you gave him the confidence in himself to go out there, and for where
I like
was,
doing that with people. I like doing that.
Yeah. Because that's another aspect which people don't understand. It's not just about lifting things and training and all that. It's making your mind strong, giving yourself confidence. That's what you gave my nephew.
Yeah, thank you. I did it for, A, Steph's a nice guy. B, you're a close friend of mine. And I don't like to associate with hoods because other gyms will feed these guys like to the lions. And I won't do that. I can feed you to the lions if I feel it's appropriate for you, but I very, very, very seldom do that. But Steph had a good time. And
up in Northern California now, they transferred him. So he's in the Navy up north of you right now, but he's always talked about the fact that what he got out of it was, first of all, you get him in shape, get off that little fat belly he had. You get him in good shape, but your organization gave him the strength of confidence to go out and fight.
A living, breathing intelligence.
Yeah. I enjoy doing that.
I don't think people understand about martial art training and all that. It's not just about attacking and fighting and all that. It's building your confidence up.
I like doing that, but I'm also prejudiced with my old age. I will not help anyone out that I think is going to really hurt people, go out in the street and fuck people up or cause trouble or make the sport look bad. So in turn, what I'll do is I'll limit their ability or I'll personally have their ticket punched or I'll punch their ticket. But I'd rather go around helping people out. That's the group I associate with, and I try and stay away from the thug factor. So helping people is a good thing. I have people like you commenting on it, so that's good.
You know, Screwdriver, I never told you, but I talked to Todd, and the reason I'm not fighting is Todd couldn't find anybody at my level to compete against me. That's
sure
what he
said. Your level or your age?
No, that too. He said, I can't find anybody at your level, your skills to fight, Bill.
Hey, I got a guy at 66 years old, boxed for 25 years, has been out for like over 25, and he's back to training, but he doesn't box anymore. He does jiu-jitsu. So if you ever want to roll, Bill, I'll hook you up with Ron, and you guys can have a senior citizen minister in the Mayball.
Wow.
And he's grown his hair out long, too. I have two long, gray-haired guys, and they're banging in the cage. You guys look kind of cute.
Usually when I fight, I like to bring a metal fold-up chair with me. You know why, Todd? Because I got to take a lot of breaks. I have to sit down and take a lot of breaks.
Oh, yeah, I know the feeling. My knees aren't what they used to be, but they're still pretty strong. So it was kind of cute. I had a guy a few weeks ago. He thought he'd tune me up, and he didn't realize I was a teacher because I came in late, and I had one of my younger people come in. So this quite large gentleman thought he would roll the old man up. Didn't quite happen that way. But he was snoring at the end of the evening because I put him to sleep. So that's old guys that still can put her out there.
What message do you give to the people about nutrition when you're training and all that, Todd? Do you explain them about the proper source of eating and the reason why to eat certain foods and all that?
Nutrition is very important. I'm from the old school, but hydration, like Bill said, is super. You always want to check your urine, eat really well, and you can eat pretty good. You have several meals a day, small amounts, and it's all about the quality, not the quantity, and your body will burn it off. If you start firing that motor up, man, you're going to burn the stuff off quick. And each body will burn a little bit differently, some more than others, and nutrition is very important. But I tell people to watch the supplements because if you're going to fight professionally or semi, those supplements will come up on some of the tests as steroids. And then if you go to fight, they test you and they find out you're banished. You're done for a year. So you have to check with your doctor and check with athletic commission of what supplements are accepted. That's a big gray area in this industry right now. And I don't even know. And we have tests all the time. So if you're going to start working out and training, then you want to fight eventually, you better check on the supplements to make sure they're on the no ban list. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, that's pretty sophisticated, and you're right, that does change. We know Barry Bonds, and we know that McGuire, we know that a lot of these track runners, some of them innocently took what they thought was correct, and now we're finding out that it was a certain medicine, a certain this, and they had stuff in them. So it is very sophisticated, very difficult. I noticed that fighting has different styles. I'd like to ask you, because I see some fighters, newer fighters, when the bell rings, man, they're in top gear, they're out there flying. And I notice you and some of the other fighters, you come out and you wait for your space. So you're controlling your energy for the longer fight.
Make moves. One of my old days, I'm an old dog now, but I like to stalk my prey. What I mean by that is I don't come out, I circle out, I make my position, and then I start following you. I make full eye contact. I'm watching every step you make. I'm seeing how your body positions, looking for the attack, and then I let you attack. I used to like to let you attack, have you beat on me, and then give you all this incredible confidence, then pull the rug out from underneath you and just devastate you. You know, so I play psychological games when I fight. I do a lot of psychological work on my opponent.
I'm playing a psychological game with Bill right now. Just ask him what he's watching.
As you and I are having this serious conversation, he's got all these naked women that are rubbing themselves up on the screen. But I am talking to you, just looking at them a little bit. Let me ask you, you're a right-handed fighter. You fight mostly right-handed fighters. What about when a left-handed fighter comes in? Does that really throw you off a little bit, or are you able to compensate for that? Or do you just try to wait to get your spot?
Yeah, I always eat it. That's always been one of my shortcomings. When they go lefty on me, man, I always forget, and then I eat a couple. Then I go, oh, okay, let's change the game. But that's always been a shortcoming of mine because most, 85% of people aren't that way. Very few.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my time, I've eaten a few of those, and eaten them, been knocked down, almost lost, came back, did lose a couple, but I've learned each time to pay attention. So you have to watch out for that. And I've learned, but not quick enough.
Do you train and do you switch hands, left-hand, right-hand training when you're fighting? I never asked you that before. I've always seen you fight right-handed. Do you switch left-handed just to mess your opponent up, mess his mind up?
I usually always tell everyone, don't change your stance, because that's where your basic core of your striking and attack and your defense. Sometimes I have personally showed off just to piss the guy off and get him to do things he normally wouldn't do. And that's a dangerous bet to do. But I like to bet once in a while. And sometimes I like to bet, and it pays pretty good. So, yeah, I would normally...
You're learning something different by seeing that left hand. Yeah.
Don't do it. Yeah.
I don't think I ever mentioned
overall,
you, Todd. When my father had me boxing in, elementary school, junior high, something like that, my first fight, he came to see me fight. The end of the first round, he walked up to and gave me some... He asked me a question. I'm going to tell you, this is exactly what he said. Bill... Yes, Dad, what? Is it your plan to let him keep hitting you in the head with his right hand until his arm gets tired? And I said, well, no, see, Dad, I'm trying to block it. And he went and sat down. That's the advice. He asked me a question. Is it your plan to let him keep hitting you in the head until his arm gets tired? You don't tell that to an elementary school kid. But that's what my father asked me.
Hey, Bill, is that like a genetic thing with you and your nephew? Because your nephew did the same thing. He was definitely using the guy's hand. I think that's a Kennedy trait.
Yeah.
We're going to
wear you
out
in an hour or two. You're going to wish you hadn't hit us so many times.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to break his hand with my face.
Let's hope I'm a little more elusive, evasive than my nephew is.
Yeah.
I'm a very old man. You don't live to be old without being a little sneaky.
No,
he never could understand.
You guys talked a little bit earlier on the hydration right into the desert. Everything you and Screwdriver said is totally true, but I can say one thing, everything you said, and this is how come I'm a freak, I do the total opposite. I ride in my shorts, I don't have any helmet, I got my sunglasses on and my tennis shoes, and it's like 90 to 120 degrees out, but I do drink lots of water while I ride my bagger through the desert, and I have my shirt off. So everything you said to do, I did the opposite, so I'm guilty.
I agree with you. Many times, I was waiting to see for you to respond. I was waiting to say, well, Bill, that may be, but everybody's different. And I know you, that's exactly how you ride, the way you described it. Not everything for everybody, but for the average guy, you cover your arms up, cover your body up. And wherever you see Todd, I'll make it easy for you. Next trip to Vegas, if you see Todd Chaney, however he's dressed, dress like Bill Kennedy, you'll be okay.
I agree. Don't do as I do, because I've seen guys go down. I watched a guy go down the way in Laughlin, sheared his leg off. I think he had heat stroke. He took the turn too wide, went in, and just went down and shaved his leg off. And I saw him at a bar an hour earlier, and he looked pink, that fat boy. And he was drinking beer, not drinking water. And he took that turn, and he didn't make it, and it cost him his leg. So my suggestion to the public is drink lots of water and relax.
One of the things that are different for us is that when we leave Barstow, California, we're heading out to Vegas or Laughlin, we do roll about triple digits. So we're rolling about 100 miles, 105 miles an hour. And what happens is we sometimes forget as we're taking an exit off the freeway, we are still in major speed mode. Coming off the freeways in California, if it's heavy traffic and all that, we're doing 75. And I see what you just said. A lot of people traveling at 100 miles an hour, their reactions aren't that quick. And people forget it.
Oh, yeah, fatal.
Yeah. Yep. Beautiful girl. Fatal. I was at the Hilton last time. Beautiful, beautiful girl went down. We stopped and helped her. And I saw her all weekend. She had scabs over her face and her body. But, you know, the bike was toasted, but she lived and all that. But, you know, I hate to see a beautiful girl marked up like that.
Turned into hamburger meat. Not good. Fortunately, I haven't gone down, knock on wood. And I've been riding since I was 8 years old. But I haven't gone down yet. But I'm sure that day is going to be there someday. So.
You haven't gone down yet, but I've seen you after hard sparring. I've seen you beat up a little bit, brother.
Oh, man, I've had double black eyes.
I've seen you limping.
Cut, nose broken, limping, done it all. I'm like the dog Lucky. I just keep going at it. Like
and I had said this before last time when I did not know you were on the air. One of the reasons that I respect you is you're a man, first of all. But you have stuck your nose in to give me assistance when the numbers were absolutely out of reality, and you never backed down once, and that's a man. So I don't want to talk too much more about that, but give me more about that bail history again, brother. Tell me about what happened. You were going to wrap it up about how the bail started in Europe, and some one of my guys wanted to know, how'd that end up and all that? How'd it get to America, and how'd that go from that point, brother? You got the floor.
Okay, we're going to make it real short, because I was going to start teaching class soon. Bail is America's started from England. We all left England to start the new colony, the new frontiers. So a lot of our rules, basically all of them, are from England. And the bail started in England. It moved to the colonies. And at the time, we were all dirt poor. We didn't really have a country or a bunch of states and independent thinkers. And we didn't have the financial means to hold people in jail. You know, we could barely feed ourselves and create the towns and the systems, so we created bail. On the Eighth Amendment, it says bail shall not be excessive. That means you create bail, a bail bondsman will create the bail. It's a civil agreement. You've already had your constitutional rights given to you. You get out on bail, I take the risk of making sure that you'll appear to the magistrate. That means for doing your trial, sentencing, or all that. So I'm taking a risk. And bail has to be semi-attainable, so when you get out of jail or the holdings, you'll have a chance to prepare your defense for your case, where instead of being in jail, it's going to be limited for your chance to do trial and your means to get a good defense and get information. So you have a way of getting out and creating a better defense before you see the magistrate or the judge. And in the old days, like the Wild West, we didn't have anything in California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. So bail is really huge. Like you'll hear about a guy named Black Bart. He was a huge bail bondsman / bounty hunter. Everybody is multitasked. And America is rich in bail history. And like today, I was in the courts at arraignment, and you'll see bail is very important for our system. We need it. It's a function. And now with the states so broke, they can't afford to house you guys and take care of you, but they want you to make sure you'll appear back in court. And the last thing the judge wants to do is go looking for you. That's an insult to the court, and then they'll issue a warrant that evening for your arrest. If you fail to appear, a warrant will immediately go out that night, and then the bail bonds will be getting in touch with you and trying to get you back in or redo your bond. Basically, it's a promissory note to the system and the state that you'll appear. And that's a really small way of putting it. So we can get into history of bail. It's pretty fascinating in this country.
I was going to say, keep us up and all that. I know you said you're going to cut a little short tonight, but I don't want you to leave without asking you. After work tonight, I was at Josh's Boar's Nest. Josh, a very young, up-and-coming bike builder. He's based out of Oceanside, California. Here we're talking about a big event that we're going to do at the Oceanside Elks Club for the Paralyzed Bikers event, raising money for the paralyzed vets down the VA hospital. I asked him to bring some of his bikes down. You mind bringing your custom bike down for exhibition so some of the people can see it? I'm not going to put a bike show on, but I want some bikes on display. Would you mind bringing your bike down?
Sure. When's that going to happen? I'd love to do that.
April 9th.
Ha ha. That's my birthday. I'm an old man. That's a busy day. I got a
bike. Oh, you should never have told me with a microphone's your birthday. You never, ever should have told me that. Oh, lordy, lordy.
I didn't
tell
him.
Yeah, one of my offspring.
I didn't tell him, and I didn't know he was going to ask you that. So I didn't set you up.
I'd like to do that. It'll be a busy day. It'll be a good day. Because that evening I got a fight at the stadium. One of my children are going to be fighting for Strike Force.
What I'm going to be doing here is, you know, basically we live in North County, San Diego County, for people long distance and all that. We don't really have a great event. We don't have any major events in North County. So I was on the phone with the Ghetto Choppers. I was down there with English Tony. I talked to Josh.
Yep.
And I've even got the Honda Goldwing stunt riding team going to come in. Believe that, Honda Goldwing stunt team. I'm going to make a big event out of it. I've taken my name off the flyer. I'm going to give everybody a chance in North County to show what we have in North County. I think we're going to have a good event. I'll talk to you more about that, okay?
Yeah, let's do it. I got to get in and teach class. Get everyone
okay, buddy.
Okay, man. Thanks for calling.
So we'll talk later. Good night, guys.
All right, pal. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. Merlin, is that you?
It's Merlin.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Screwdriver. How are you guys?
Not bad.
I bumped into a friend of yours out here in the wilds of Louisiana, the Raging Cajun, Perry, out of the geysers of Oceanside.
No
I'm
kidding.
No kidding. Yeah, I'm riding along a road in Louisiana, southwest New Orleans, and this older Goldwing kind of puts by me a little bit, and I look at the back of his bike, and it's got California plates. I set him a gun. And in the process of riding along, I end up in front of him at one point. He looks at a bag I've got on the back of my bike, and it says on the bag itself, it says Cal Band Dad. But the way I got it strapped on, it looked to him like it said Carlsbad. And he saw the California plate on my bike, and he pulled up alongside, and he said, "Are you from Carlsbad?" And I went, "Well, yeah, I guess." And anyway, we pulled over for beer. And sure enough, it's Perry, Raging Cajun, out of the geysers. And I spent 2 days with him in Schriever, Louisiana, where he's hanging now. Had a ball. Guy's a kick. And you know, we shared stories about the Kennedy brothers and the whole thing. And I hope he's listening tonight. I left this morning. Where he's at. I hope he's listening tonight. But anyway, yeah, it's really cool to bump into somebody that you know, out in the middle of nowhere. But
well, most of our events with him is always at the OMTI, One More That Big Bar. He's not afraid to have a drink or two and shake somebody's hand. Good person, though. Good person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
Merlin, did he say he's staying back there in Louisiana, or is he up visiting? I didn't catch that.
Well, he grew up back here. And,
I know, he's from that area.
Yeah, couldn't
Hence
find
the
enough
big
work
action.
Out there. Came back here, I think, about 18 months ago, and pretty much I think he's going to stay. He hasn't really settled in, but he hasn't really found work either. There's work, but they got a thing down here that called a TWIC, T-W-I-C, they call it a TWIC, and it's a temporary worker identity card. And Homeland Security, my favorite non-responsible agency, boy, they got into this, and you can't get work anywhere around the area along the Gulf Coast without a TWIC card. And it costs $135, and then they start processing your paper. It seems to take between 3 and 5 weeks, and it's basically a background check. You know, the one your credit company will do for you for $25, and but the federal government's involved. And
well, anytime they get involved, they fuck anything up.
Yeah, and he was saying that you can't even get an application for work unless
you've
got
the
I got to
apologize, sorry for a second, because I got to ask you, I'm always interested. What were you doing in Louisiana? You're always somewhere.
F- food. Good food.
That's outstanding, yeah.
It, oh, God, the Cajun food and the people he's staying with, you know, they're eighth or ninth generation Cajuns, and, it, oh, gee, they opened their house to me, and you know, he dragged me home, and or I followed him home, and I said, will you keep me? And they did. You gotta go to this area and check out food.
Yeah.
French Quarter.
Did you get over to New Orleans? Did you go to New Orleans?
Yeah. I was in New Orleans all this afternoon.
Did you take that 17th mile causeway back to the mainland? Or how'd you get over back from New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans to Slidell.
Slidell, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's, oh, God, and New Orleans, the city, it's clean, it's bright, it's pretty, it's neat, it's full of tourists, there ain't no parking places in there, but it's alive and well, and that was real encouraging, and the Gulf Coast from the oil spill is clean and green and alive and well, and I talked with some people that have shrimp boats, and they said, no, we're looking forward to a great season. And, yeah, it's really, real encouraging down here, you know, other than the Homeland Security and the employment business. But, you know, things are looking real well down here. There's been a ton of money dumped in after the hurricanes and then the oil spill. But the oil companies, they're starting to pick back up, and they're – man, if you can run a ship or a boat, they're looking for crews and captains down here. I guess there's a ton of oil support boats and not enough crews to fill them because they got billboards alongside the highways advertising for crews and mates and skippers and tow captains. And God, all them guys along the West Coast that got papers and can't find boats, they're all here.
Wow. Did you get down to the old cemetery by any chance when you're down there?
Yeah, I did.
In New Orleans. Did you get down the old cemetery?
Yep.
I thought that was just amazing, the seeing something that was that old and seeing the, I forgot the lady's name now, the big witch. The Black Magic Queen down there. I forgot she was down there. There was so much I enjoyed seeing down there, and I never met a rude person when I was down there.
No, and I got to agree. The half dozen times I've been in and out of New Orleans, never a rude person. And
the accent.
The language.
Let me ask you if you've been there a couple of times. Monsieur, parlez-vous français? Merlin?
Oh.
Can you say, what's the big saying down there? Try English first. New Orleans,
English
what's
first
the big saying they say over and over?
Let the good times roll.
May we. Can you say that in Francais?
Roulez-vous bon temps?
Yeah, you got most of it. You got close to it. Regardez bon temps roulé, but close enough with that, Francais has been old and all that. But, I like the accent. I like the people. I like the sincerity.
Yeah.
And for a big city, which got nothing but tourists and people coming and going, the people I met down there, Merlin, I really enjoyed them. I envy you your trip down this time.
Yeah, they don't call it the Big Easy, by accident, because it's an easy place to just deal with. The traffic is terrible, but the rest of it is just great. And like I say, the city looks good. There's a lot of clean, a lot of fresh paint, and rebuilt this, I wandered through a lot of the little neighborhoods. My son was living in New Orleans when Rita hit, or no, Katrina. He
Katrina.
Lost his house in Katrina. And so I went down into his neighborhood and everything where he was, and before and then the house he actually lost in St. Bernard. And there's still some empty lots, and you can see some damage. I looked at one multi-story hotel building downtown, and it still looks like it did the day after the hurricane left. That was an unusual thing. Everything else, boy, people have cleaned up, and they're trying to get that city back alive and well, and it's working.
Well, those people who live there, as you just pointed out there, they're there three, four, five, six generations.
Yeah.
They have a lot of pride in that city. They're not going to let that city go at all. Brother, did you get to hear any of the Nolans music? Did you get to see any of the funeral marches or anything?
Well, it was there was a couple of young men playing in the quarter, and they were kind of walking around the street doing a little bit. But the LSU Tiger Band was playing. They were playing right at the there's a big square and park right in the quarter today, and they were playing and boy, they pretty much dominated the air, because that's, I don't know, 108 people and man, all those old buildings were rocking and rolling to the marching band of the LSU Tigers, and that was kind of fun because I'm a Cal fan myself, but Cal and Clemson. But anyway, and I thought about actually staying downtown, and then I thought by the time I got a hotel downtown and then drank a little and went bar hopping to catch the music and everything, I'd go through $150 or $200, and I can't afford that. But I am putting together a ride that will start in St. Louis in June and come down the Mississippi down to New Orleans. And Beata, Bill, you know Beata. She's going to ride out here and meet me in New Orleans, in St. Louis, and then we're going to go down the Mississippi, New Orleans, and then she's going to return back to the West Coast, and I'm going to turn back up to head towards Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, let me just stop for a second. Many of our listeners don't understand just exactly what are you doing. You're out here riding around America.
Can
you tell everybody what you're doing?
Offloaded, either got it taken away from me or sold everything that doesn't fit on the motorcycle, and I left California last May to do what I'm calling the last road trip. If you never finish, you never have to start another one, and that's what I'm doing. And today, when I entered, like tonight, I'm about 4 miles inside the Mississippi state line on Highway 90 at a beautiful little campground. $5 to camp for the night. This is my 25th or 26th state since May, I'm just wandering around. Basically, I think I got enough money to get to where the government will pay my Social Security, in which case I become a government-sponsored motorcycle and road wearer outer, and that's what I'm doing. Yeah. And I am meeting the finest people every day.
Let me talk about this one second, because people really are beginning to realize you are quite a unique character I wrote for many, many years. But if you're in different parts of America and you're hearing this, how could some people get in touch with you? How could they invite you to their neighborhood, Merlin?
I'm on Facebook. That's one. My email is merlinbianco1@juno.com. That's MERLINBIANCO1, the digit one, at juno.com. And I'd love to hear from people as to saying, oh, you need, because I have business cards, and it says Finding America, one suggestion at a time. I need you to suggest a destination. So I made up a word, a suggestination. And so when somebody says, oh, you got to go see Royal Gorge in Colorado, or my daughter said, go down to the beach in South Louisiana and along the Gulf Coast and go put your feet in the sand, and is the oil as bad as it? And so I did. That's why I'm going to go to Boston. Somebody said, well, Pete and Gino from a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I'm still waiting for an email number on address on them. Boy, when they found out I was going to Boston, they said, oh, God, we'll show you where the bars are and where the bike roads, which is exactly what I want to know, because the people I'm going to meet back there, they're not bikers. They're family.
Yeah, what I'd like to mention briefly, too, sorry to interrupt you, is if you get a chance, check him on Facebook and all that. And if you're if you got an extra sofa, he'd like to come to your house. He'd like to meet you. He wants to meet people. Him staying at a campground, staying at a hotel. You know,
he's in the chat room, Bill.
Who's in the chat room?
Pete.
Pizza, no, I'm saying anybody wants to reach him.
No, I know.
If they want, they can stay with that. Hey, Pete's in the chat room now. Merlin, you want to say hello to Pete?
Let me see if I can get him to call in.
Hang one more second. You and I keep talking when he comes on.
Yeah,
anybody in America that wants to say, hey, I got an extra sulfur like that.
Yeah.
I love the other side and all that. That's what Merlin's really doing. He's taking the time to smell the roses.
And also, we can hook you up with Betsy when you get there.
Betsy?
In Boston.
In Boston.
Did you talk to Betsy last time, Merlin?
I don't know if I talked to Betsy. Now, Jan in North Carolina, I've talked to a couple of times. And Pete and Gino. Who else? God, this has been a really fun thing to do, Bill and Screwdriver both. I really appreciate you letting me play in the park here. And you guys,
I'm living vicariously through your lifestyle, brother.
And I got where are you at right now?
I'm about 8 miles inside the western Mississippi and Louisiana state line on Highway 90.
We got somebody just gave you an invitation. Could you tell who that is, please?
This is Charlie Baker. Sometimes some nights we play most of his music. I try and keep it in rotation, He says to tell Merlin to come to Nashville.
And Nashville's absolutely, including Highway 12 that goes out to the Dragon Tail out of Nashville, definitely place of things. Charlie and I talked, it was a couple of months ago now. When you had him on maybe a couple of months ago. I'm looking forward to that because his music is so good. If people want to recommend a road or a place or, here's an event like Laconia in June.
Do you have Charlie's phone number?
No, I don't.
All right, send me a text. You got my phone number, right? My cell phone number?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, send me a text. And then I'll get Charlie's number and I'll send it to you. You can ring him up.
Send you a text. Oh God, you mean I got to learn how to send text?
Get my number where it says send message.
Yeah.
And then I'll send it back to you.
See,
just put it in there. Just put in there. Hello, whatever, and I'll send you his number back.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a smart person. I should learn how to do texting by this point in my life. But
you're probably like Bill. He says everything that you have to do your fingers to get communicate on is made by the devil.
No. Merlin's got different. Merlin's into technology. He's got this stuff down. I don't want to belittle your riding abilities, but please be careful going through the Dragon Tail. Your vehicle,
fact,
a full-on bagger, is not really conducive to making those turns on the red tail,
I wore that old bagger out. I put $200,000 on that one. I've got this 95 Sport Glide.
Well, still, be careful. The Dragon Tail's not for somebody
We got
another caller. Hang on. Don't go anywhere, Merlin. Who we got in the air?
Hello, Charlie.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How much? We got Merlin on the line. I know you heard us. I know you heard us talking. As soon as Merlin sends me a text, I'm gonna send him on your phone number if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure, man. Tell Merlin we can take the Dragon Tail on a bagger, man. Come on.
You'd be amazed what I've done on a bagger or an overloaded Dynaglide now. But
just don't go over 45 miles an hour. That's all.
Yeah. All you got to do is stay between the lines, right? It's like
that's
coloring.
It, yeah.
It's serious, like point it in the right direction and go.
Yeah,
well, the worst thing, man, is all the guys on the crotch rockets blowing by you. Those are the dangerous ones.
No, the worst thing is when you have to stop and help them either,
get
through
up.
The last minutes of life. That's the worst part.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I did a ride through the Ouachita Mountains. It straddles the border between Oklahoma and Arkansas. There's a scenic byway up there is really, really pretty. And I have the ashes of a friend of mine, longtime friend, Skip Asmus. He was killed in January out there. And I spread some of them on that scenic byway because he would have loved that mountain road. So, you know, I got about 9 different things going on in this trip that's supposed to be simple. And it just, I keep finding other fun things to do with it. And like taking him on his last road trip. And so it's.
Merlin and Charlie, can you hang on for a second?
Hang on.
Somebody else wants to talk to
Merlin,
you.
Merlin.
Yes.
When are you heading back this way? Because in May, on May 7th, correct, Charlie?
Right.
On May 7th, I'll be there with Charlie, and he's doing his second annual Feeding America party.
I don't know if Charlie wants 2 guys from California out there on the same day, though. Charlie said,
yeah.
You guys have...
Now,
I'm on your list.
I don't know. Right now I'm kind of working towards Key West, and then I'm going to go up the East Coast. But I'm going to zigzag all the way from, you know, back and forth over the Appalachians and stuff. So I may be in that area in Nashville around May. I don't know. I know I could certainly do it. I know I'm going
to
be in
Georgia. We have another caller that wants to talk to you.
978, come on, you're live. Talk to us.
Hey, what's up?
Phone number 978.
That's me. Public enemy number one.
Pete, we have Charlie and Merlin on the line.
Hey, Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, Pete?
How you doing, brother?
Hey,
I'm
Pete,
doing
how
good,
are
man.
You?
Hey, Merlin, what's happening, my brother?
Oh, good to hear from you.
How's the riding coming?
Well, you know, it's tough, but somebody gets to do it.
I admire you,
know,
you man, because...
I can only do 300-400 miles a day if I push, and then I'll find 8 miles that are absolutely fantastic, and I'll spend all day doing them. You know, I spent 4 days in Louisiana, just eating Cajun mostly, and drinking beer.
Have you hit Boston yet?
No, I'm working my way to the East Coast, and then I'll start working my way up. That's what we were just talking about, that I want to zigzag over to Nashville about May, and that seems like a pretty good excuse to be anywhere is, you know, Charlie's music.
We're doing a 200-mile round-trip bike ride for Feeding America. So I know
you're doing about a
10,000-mile bike ride for America, but that's what we're doing here in Nashville.
Yeah,
Charlie, I heard you were coming to Massachusetts.
Hey, man, check the website, Pete, because I've got a bunch of dates up in Mass, man. So
yeah.
Look around on there and see where you're close to.
Yeah, I'll see
you. Yeah, man, there's stuff all over there. I can't think of the Jockey Club, different things that are off there, not too far from Boston.
Yeah, I'm there.
All right, cool.
I saw that. I was like, whoa, Charlie Baker's coming to Massachusetts. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Got to check that show out, man. You know?
10 shows in 10 days.
I'll have plenty of people with me that like you.
Yeah,
music.
We're rocking. Yeah.
Cool.
That's a tough schedule. You got enough time on both sides to make that work?
Oh, man, it's a little rough line. I mean, I'm doing, and that's all going to be Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Mass. And then prior to that, I'm going to do 3 or 4 shows in New York and Pennsylvania. So it's really going to end up to be about 15 shows in 15 days.
Mm.
Wow.
Well, Bill, good luck.
But, I got a couple days off because I'm doing 2 shows. The way this works out, I'm doing 2 shows a day in some spots. So I'm going to take a day off here and there. Like, we're off July 4th and stuff like that. But it's going to be pretty cool.
I'm looking at the flyer right now, Charlie. And if anybody wants to know where you can get anything, any kind of a flyer like that, you can go to bakersongs.com. I'll put that in the chat.
Is that the
website?
Is that Charlie? Is that your website, bakersongs.com?
Yeah,
correct.
I'm going on there now.
And what I'm looking at here, Bill, is the second annual biker benefit for the Second Harvest of Middle Tennessee and Feeding America on Saturday, May 7th in 2011. Music guests are going to be Andy Dozer. The music headliner is going to be Phoenix Rising. Another musical guest could be Andrew Valise. We're going to have a celebrity cooking challenge, Best Backyard Burger. Charlie, you want to tell him one of the celebrities is going to be, because he's afraid to go to Tennessee.
Well, I'm not sure who they're all going to be, but I'm hoping there's one coming from California to come out there and cook some food for us.
There, he can be the other celebrity.
Oh, Charlie, I'm looking at your dates here. I see you at Webster, Mass. That's about 35 minutes from me. You're going to be at Webster, Mass at Tal's Place Bar, and then you're going to be at that other place in Raynham, the Jockey Club.
The Jockey Club, that's where I'll be with the band. Half of those dates are solo acoustic, and half of those dates are with Still Burning backing me up.
So the rest of that says, guys, is the food drive is non-perishable items please. We're going to have vendors, prizes, raffles all day. More details at bakersongs.com. We get to meet the Miller girls.
Yep.
It's going to be held at
great.
We're
going to
be held at the
Bailey.
Yeah, and we're going to have it's going to be at the Bikini Beach Bar. I hope they have some better strippers than the ones they had last time, Charlie.
Well, what was wrong with the ones they had last time?
Yeah, he was ugly, wasn't
they? They looked like three squirrels trying to get out of a bag. That's why Charlie got up to go get the drinks.
He never came back.
Never back after the music stopped and they left. But it's at 1297 Antioch Pike, Nashville, Tennessee, beginning at 12 noon till it's over. One of the main features besides the music is going to be the 200-mile round-trip motorcycle ride to the Dale Hollow Lake. The bikes leave the Bikini at 9 a.m.
Yep.
Sweet. I will try to make it. That sounds like a good thing to tug into May. I didn't have anything to do in May yet. So.
Can't believe Charlie Baker's going to be in Massachusetts. Holy crap.
I'm going to be all over that place.
That's too cool, man.
Yeah.
Nobody comes here.
Now, when's he going to be in Mass?
That's
going to be in Mass
in July.
July?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be there in August. Got a family reunion. My daughter's in-laws and all of their family, they've invited me to, show up.
Hopefully it's not snowing.
Hey, Merlin, I'm curious about something I heard you say a while ago. Did you say that you got to have some sort of government permit now to work offshore or something? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, down along the coast where there's a bunch of oil spill money going in.
Right.
And the Homeland Security has gotten involved, and they do what's called a temporary worker identification card called a TWIX. And it costs you $135, and they do a background check, and it's almost impossible to find work without that card. And because the federal money says, well, all your workers need to be cleared, and so the feds have invented a worker identity loop, and Perry, a guy they call Cajun Ragin', he was out of the Geezers Club in Oceanside. He's been back home in Louisiana for I think 18 months now, and he says you can't even get an application without the card in your hand. And
you got to have a worker's identification card to work down there on the Gulf Coast, but not
Homeland Security is the agency. And they're like my new best hated federal lump, because you try to find them in the phone book and it's like their secret or something. But
I wonder if you have to have a worker's identification card to work in a restaurant in Phoenix, Arizona.
I don't know, either that or just go in and be illegal. I don't know.
I mean, come on, what's the deal?
Yeah, I was told that. To not even bother. I said, come on, like go into work for AutoZone, something like that. And they said, no, what's happened is there's, it's kind of a trickle-down thing. And I saw it in the aerospace industry. Everybody's got to be, doing it proper. And the only way to find out if they're doing it proper is you make everybody sign up to the full set of rules. So wherever there's federal money going in, everybody's going, well, without a TWIX card, we don't even want to talk to you. So I don't know if the school bus drivers have to have them, but I think maybe they do. And it's getting dopey because the general consensus of opinion around the dinner table last night, and this is with three different generations of workers, was that it probably is just pure bogus, except it's a way for somebody to keep track of who's doing what to where. Because it's got a stripe on it, and so you swipe it when you, you know, they take your application and they swipe the card, and so now they know who you're applying with, and it's, you know, those of us who are paranoid because the government works this way, we're really concerned about it, and the people that trust the government, they're not concerned about it, but then they trust the government, so... You know,
well,
Mara, I already know that
this stuff started a long time ago with grocery stores. I mean, there's no absolutely no reason why grocery stores say you can't purchase this gallon of milk for the price that it's in our inside that cooler for unless you have our card. And when you get to the checkout counter, you have to swipe that card with all your identification. They know exactly what you're eating, exactly when you bought what you're eating, and exactly how much money you're spending.
Yeah, and I do it, and I use the card all over the country because it does save me money.
It's the same thing.
So I hope I'm confusing somebody.
It's the way of tracking you. There's no practical reason why I can't fly to California and go to Vons.
Right.
Because I'm from Tennessee, I can't walk into Vons, and vice versa. Because you're coming from California, you can't walk into what we have here as a Kroger's and purchase food items without filling out a form.
A lot of the chains, like Safeway and Ralph's, stuff like this, I found that the card, boy, it works. I get the discount, and, you know, middle of Wyoming, I get my discount. But I know it's a marketing gimmick. It gives them an idea as to who's buying what and everything. And like I say, I just keep hope by fooling them because I'm using that card all over this country. Shit, we can't keep track of him. He's everywhere. But
just want to tell you guys, the feds decided today to side with the debit card companies, the banks, that for every time you use your debit card now, every time you swipe it, you're going to pay the fees, not the merchant.
Yeah, and they're going to lower your debit card. Some banks are going to be the $50 maximum purchases, and some are going to be $100.
Yep.
That's the next thing on the table.
I'm just going to have to go back to cash then.
Okay.
I tried to get a replacement debit card and then again a backup later on, and they want to send it to my home of record. Well, when you're in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and you lose the card, having one sent to Alameda, California ain't no good. And so I tried to get... While I was in San Diego a couple of months over the holidays and stuff, I said, "Gump, give me I need a replacement card." And he said, "Well, okay, you know, we'll send it to you." And I said, "No, I don't want it sent to San Francisco, to Alameda. I want it sent here to your branch, or you guys give me one. And so I don't have to have somebody up there send it down here and have it placed where I can pick it up."
And what's funny with that is they can't give you one, but if you close your account, they'll give you one.
Yeah, they don't know how to hand you a card. And I said, "That's nuts." So
right.
They said, "Well, we'll have it FedExed to our branch." And I said, "Okay, that's fine." I said, "I'll even pay the FedEx, you know." And they said, "Oh, no, we got it." And they couldn't do it. They honestly, Wells Fargo, couldn't figure out how to get the card sent from their processing center to a branch where they insisted, and sure enough, about a week later, I get a phone call from Alameda saying that, "Oh, hey, we got the bank card here. Did you lose another one?" "No, that's a backup. Just hang on to it. I'll get it in August when you bring it to the family reunion." And I'm going, "You guys are nuts." I get a check, and it takes you 10 days to clear it in 3 milliseconds.
Because it's a government check, right?
You know. Well, no, this was an insurance company check, and they said they wanted 10 days to clear it, and I said, "That's nuts."
Yeah.
And they finally looked at it and decided, oh, okay. And then they did a little, said, well, yeah, 3 days. And I said, great. It takes 3 milliseconds to find out the money is good and the check is good. So who gets the interest on that 3 or 4 days worth of money? Yeah, I ain't, so I know they're doing it.
Right.
You know, just, and it's one of the reasons I'm not in California, just because, I don't know, I feel like California is worse than the rest of the country at it, as far as, you know, welcome to California, leave your wallet and go home.
Merlin, got you on the phone, I got Charlie, got Pete. I'd like to just tell a little bit about Mexico. You and I crossed into Mexico.
Food.
Now I try to come back into America, and what's waiting for us at the border, Merlin? Is that weird?
We went down to Ensenada, and we come back up, and we got a bunch of booze, all stacked in my bike because I got the bagger. But anyway, you hit the borderline, and it's 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour if you wait in line in your car. Well, we're on bikes, so you kind of lane split. And the problem with lane splitting coming up into the border crossing is all of the Mexican pedestrian vendors, not like they're selling pedestrians, but they are pedestrians being vendors, selling everything from gum to serapes and porcelain items. You turn on all the lights on the bike, and with me, I turned the stereo up so they knew I was coming, and you lane split, and they'll pull out of the way for it. And we were just doing this, and we get to the border, and this was one of the times that comes to mind is when Bruce was with us, and Bruce was a border patrolman on a medical leave of absence, and the rest of us sail through. They ask you, you know, are you a U.S. citizen? Have you got $10,000? And I said, if I got $10,000 on me, you think I'd be going back into California? But anyway, we all sail through, and we look around going, where's Bruce? Bruce is over in the secondary inspection area, and they're ripping his stuff apart because he's Border Patrol coming in from Mexico. They don't even trust themselves. But we have had some kick times in Mexico, Ensenada especially, and Puerto Nuevo, and Jefe's runs. I had the neatest time with Jefe in Pacific Beach a couple of months ago. You know, for a 76-year-old man, geez, he looks good. Ain't nobody deserves to look that good that age. He's
I kind of keep looking at his wife, but, you know, to each his own.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I think he's lying about something, either his age or he's got two cosmetic surgeons working overtime. But I was amazed at how good he looked and the fact that he remembered me. He's like a hero, and he remembers me, and that just made me feel real good. And then he told me aside and told me he was proud to know my brother Steve and I, and that just, man, to find a number of years of your life validated 15, 18 years later is really kind of a nice thing to have happen.
Hey, I could tell you a quick story about him.
About him?
I went back to Chicago to see my mom. My brother told me, hey, mom's okay, man. Why don't you go up to Milwaukee? This is the Harley 100th anniversary. I was like, nah, you know, I came back to see mom. I really wasn't going to go. And when I got back, I told Bill, this is exactly what happened. At the fairgrounds in Milwaukee, I'm watching Ted Nugent, then I watch Bad Company, and then I watch the Doobie Brothers. The next day, I go back to see the Doobie Brothers, who are opening for Elton John. There's 100,000 people in this park watching this. Out of this crowd, a guy walks up and taps me on the shoulder. I turn around and saw Jefe.
Yeah.
There's fucking 1,000 people in this park, and he taps me on the shoulder.
Yeah,
so he says, hey, you know who the headliner is? I said, no. He said, Elton John. I said,
the
Doobie Brothers
were opening for Elton John. That's strange.
Yeah.
No.
Strange mix.
I know, yeah.
Bill can tell you, they made the biggest mistake ever by getting him, because as soon as he started playing,
people started leaving.
75,000 people turned around and left.
Well, you know, once again.
Merlin, let me ask you. I want to ask you one quick story, and I got to mention. I want to tell a story about a screwdriver. Years ago, you and your brother and I, a whole bunch of people, went down to Mexico. Where did I lose you two people? You want to tell me what happened? One you went left and one you went right? Merlin's going, what the hell is he talking about? Merlin, you remember that? You and your brother went down?
Yeah.
And your brother wanted to go inland? You want to go along the coast? Do you remember that?
No, I wanted to go inland. He wanted along the coast. I like the inland. I like the old road.
Anyway, yes, that's either
wanted,
way, yeah. Tell us what happened. That's crazy.
There. And I got it. It seems to me it ended up with something like, you know, I that's all right, I'll see him later. Or I know, you know, it was one of those things where we just went, you know, screw you, I'm going this way. But not really. It's kind of a vague. Maybe that was one where I started drinking before I got to Mexico. But
hey, so we're in the middle of nowhere, and one brother says to me, I'm going this way. The other brother says, I'm going that way. I'm saying, I think we should all stick together. And the two of us said, we'll see you down in Mexico. And they left me. I know where I was going. I had the people. But you got to meet these two Bianco brothers. Truly, one of them goes left and one of them goes right. That's the story of their life. But I want to tell you one quick story about a screwdriver.
Oh, you're not going to
tell
me.
Oh, I'm going to tell them. I've waited this for so long.
All right, I'll give you a build-up on this.
Go ahead.
I got a grill on it. Back of my
car. Where are we going?
We're going to Ensenada. Okay. And Merlin, as you know, you can go right and go into town, or you can go left and go through the back way through wine country, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, just imagine this. I got it's about 28, 29 years old when this happened. Asleep on the back of my bike, holding on to me. Go, Bill.
50 motorcycles plus passengers, most. We came to a point. Wait, would you describe how she was holding on to you before I continue my story? Would you explain that?
Get one hand on the control stick.
You got it.
And drooling on my shoulder.
Turn off an Ensenada. Had 50 people with me because the first time coming down, and I'm going to take everybody to the hotel. One of us has got his mind, God knows where. We got to this big split. 49 motorcycles and passengers turn right. One turn left. Looking at him, I may never see him again. But his mind was elsewhere than the road, gentlemen. I want to share that with you.
Well, the best looking girl I ever had, and I've been lucky. God's been good to me. But the best looking girl I ever had on the back of that big old red bagger was the day we were shooting one of the Renegade episodes. You know, with.
Salamis and Branscombe Richmond, the TV
Lorenzo
series, yes.
They had 30 of us, and we three columns of 10, and we were going to come up the road, and Lorenzo was going to come down between column 1 and column 2 and pass through the pack. And they wanted to film this. And so what they did was they took a bunch of us and gave us backseat accessories that were specially selected for their beauty and then properly costumed to where you didn't care if this girl was on a little red wagon. Nobody was going to look at me in that bike. And anyway, I'm in the middle column, second bike back, and this Pit Popsy is in the, and she's just too cute and too good looking and so well dressed, and I'm sitting there just going, oh God, and I'm supposed to ride too. And we pull the scene off, and they got it on the first take. They weren't sure if we could do it at all, much less get it right on the first take. And so they say, God, that's neat. Now we want to do it, and we're going to put cameras in the pack, and then we'll do it another time and put a camera on the back of Lorenzo's bike. So they take this beautiful little girl off the back of my motorcycle and give me a 260-pound sweaty cameraman with 80 pounds of gear, and I'm supposed to hold a line of, you know, in this column, and he can't sit still. And I'm thinking, give me the girl back on about 9 different levels. Give me the girl back.
But, do you remember you and Anna? In Tijuana,
oh,
in that major
Anna was a sweetheart, and Anna Williams, God bless her, she's on the back of the bagger, and I've got a bagger with the box and everything, and I got everybody's bottle of Kahlua in the back, because you're only allowed to bring in one quart per person, and I got about 10 back there, because everybody else doesn't have a bagger. That's all right, we'll load up mine. So Anna's on the back seat, the box is full of Kahlua, and we're coming out of the Solo Angels clubhouse and heading for the border. And as we're coming down one of the hills, Bill apparently knows where all of the speed bumps are, but he didn't tell me about this one.
Well,
and
no, sometimes he does that just to see what you're going to do.
Oh, I packed into that speed bump.
It was
Bill's
nighttime. You couldn't see it at all.
And
my stopping my bike,
and then,
that
and,
might have been a sign.
After I appeared with that girl, as well as,
yeah.
Where were you? What were you doing? What? Why did you decide to go that way?
Oh, yes. Who was that person? Who was that person who was asking the questions?
You did show up after all of that, didn't you, Screwdriver? I mean, you did find the other 49, right?
Yeah,
or
did
that take an hour before you got there? Or?
No, it was dark when I got there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I always liked the excuse it was dark. But
anyway, to wrap that story up there, Merlin, when you got up to the exit to come into America, and they asked you, do you have anything to declare, what did you say?
That I had everybody's liquor. I got his liquor. Well, I didn't want them to find it, because if they find it, then they know you're hiding something. So if you tell them. And he looked at me, and I said, well, you see that bike over there? That one? And I said, I got everybody's liquor. And he said, oh, no problem. And then he realized that it's leaking. Because
that's
I'd hit
right,
that
except for the broken bottles and the alcohol's pouring all over the ground.
I'd hit that speed bump, broke a bottle of Kahlua, and according to Bill, Anna bounced high enough that he saw the Pacific Ocean between her bottom and the top of the box on the back of the bagger. And now he's telling me it's dark, so I'm not sure what to believe. But no doubt about it, we hit that bump, and she went up, and I broke bottles. This was the same night, I got terrible feedback. We went to the sports arena, and they had a bike show, and I won best bagger because the judge was out there trying to judge the thing, and I'm leaking Kahlua. And he turned around and said, has anybody got a straw? And sure enough, we had one. And I won best bagger because he had a straw and a bottle of Kahlua at the same time he was judging my bike.
Merlin, did you take your bike out on the ice ring that night?
Yes.
They put a rug out. How's this for Tennessee? How's this for a bike show? Ice skating rings, small rugs. We ride custom bikes out into a frozen ice skating ring where a hockey game's going to go on next. We get the custom bikes on a rug. Only in
so
California.
Everybody pushes their bike out, not me. I don't push that motorcycle unless it's broke. And I rode my bike on, and I got a standing ovation because I rode that sucker out there. Just, you know, I don't push motorcycles. That's not why I pay for them. You want me to push something, you pay me.
Merlin, we got another person, Art from Poway. You out there, Art? You want to jump in anywhere? Say hello to somebody?
Yeah, I'll say hi to Merlin. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, this Art,
you remember Art from Poway?
Yeah, every so often he drops a little hidey-ho on the Facebook to me. How you doing, Art?
Doing good, doing good.
I think this is same Art, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I met
yeah,
you
okay.
up here at Bill's. Came up and talked to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Merlin, you can badmouth me all you want, but admit to everybody, I can get you out of Mexico, right, and get you back to America.
You have gotten me out of Mexico. In fact, it was probably you that got me back in after the bad surfing episode in the 60s, but you weren't on that trip. That just it was some other shark.
Well,
but,
I've never
said anything bad about Bill except to Kathy. She's the only one, and Kathy's mom. I would say bad things to her because she was always amused by that. But Yeah. Even Raging Cajun and I, we couldn't find anything bad to say about you either. And there was two of us drinking, trying to do it. We couldn't do it. So we need to talk more to Phil. He's probably got bad stuff.
All that love.
Hey, Art, you making any bike runs coming up next month? We got two big ones coming. Is the 7th and the 8th Screwdriver?
The 9th.
9th, 8th, and 9th?
Tomorrow's the Saturday's the diabetes run.
That's way out. Junction is somewhere.
Right. Starts at Sweetwater and then
we'll
it goes
back
out.
Down by Mexico.
Yeah, on April 2nd, I got to go to Sacramento. MMA's having its 38th anniversary.
God.
So I've got to go up for that.
Uh-huh.
And then also on Saturday over in Cave Creek is the big party over there.
Oh, Arizona, Cave Creek. Yeah, that ought to be a good one.
That's going to be Saturday the 2nd.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm going to that one.
Yeah, they're both on the same day, so I'm kind of stuck on that.
Yeah.
I tried to get them.
Go ahead, Art.
I was trying to get them to do the MMA party down at the same time, down in Cave Creek, and then have our meeting on Sunday. But they wouldn't do it.
No, well, they really don't want to. Anybody that's anybody is going to be there. And there's going to be such a strong presence that a lot of people really don't want their picture taken.
Yes, people from all parts of Europe contacting me trying to get hotel reservations and all that. This is a serious type of a gathering.
This is going to be the 62nd anniversary.
That's right. This is a serious, serious gathering of the clans.
There we go.
Yep.
Hey, guys, I need to step out of here. I got to cut my act short here a little bit. I want to thank you again for letting me play in the pond.
Absolutely.
And
don't forget to send me a text if you figure it out.
I will. And as always, it's a absolute joy to talk to everybody and anybody. You know, Bill, you know me. I'll talk to anybody and everybody. But I really like talking to friends. But I need to wander off here for a little bit. I thank you so much.
And you're welcome anytime.
Greg, good luck on your, especially the PVA run you got coming up over at the Elks Club there in Oceanside. My brother is a member of the PVA, and you don't get that one by joining up. They come to you and say, now that you can't walk, you're in. And he's fortunately, the surgery is working, and he's back on his feet. But these are guys that really got it. They got the membership the hard way. And anything you can do to help, it's worth doing. So, both of you, good luck on your events. MMA, congratulations on 38, man. I remember being 38. That was fun. But anyway, thank you, guys. Good night. God bless. Shiny up. And everybody out here must be a friend of someone. Talk to you later.
Good night, Marlon. Nice talking to you.
Take care.
Let's get to meet this guy in person. He's first of all, he's honest as the day is long. He's just generally happy to be on his motorcycle. He's generally happy to meet people. Doesn't care about a nickel or a dime. He's college educated, something to do with aerospace or something. He just put his priorities together, and he's just driving around America and going to keep riding as long as he can. That's not a bad way to live your life, you know?
Oh, no. I admire that man. Wish I could do it. I can't even leave the goddamn state. Is Charlie still on the phone?
I think Charlie hung up, or we lost him.
Oh. Eva Lee was supposed to call in. He called me last night. He's a funny guy.
You know, he is a good guy, too. We've never met in person, but I've always enjoyed his conversation. I think you got to help other people to help yourself.
Yeah.
I really believe that strongly. That's why Screwdriver and I are so much involved. We work hard with the veterans, but any charity event that I believe that is honest and all that, we try to help out. And Screwdriver and I try to scrutinize all these charities that want money from us and help from us. We try to scrutinize it all we can, and I like Charlie's style. I do.
You know what I realized? I was looking on Phil, I was looking on your page. I seen the picture of you with Robert Patrick, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize he was in the Booze Fighters. He's a booze fighter.
He's the president of
the Hollywood 101 chapter.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool, because I like him. I like his acting. He was in Terminator and X-Files. And how is he as a person? He seems like a decent guy. I mean,
no, he is. What you see is what you get. He came down my shop a while back and just rode up and, hey, how you doing, da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to meet some people and all that. And, there's no type of Hollywood in him. He's just happy to be on the motorcycle. He's got a good life. He realizes it, and he's just a happy camper.
I saw that picture. I was like, whoa, he knows Robert Patrick. You know, I'm a big fan of his, and he's a booze fighter. I'm like, holy crap, and he's a president. Wow.
The booze fighters are pretty much worldwide. They got a good organization going. Good riding people. They do some. They're on their bikes an awful lot. That's one of the things about being a booze fighter. You can make any statement you want about them. These guys ride their motorcycle. All of them ride their motorcycles. They ride them hard too. So my shop in Oceanside, Kennedy's Custom Cycles, they know they can pop in, get out of the sun, take a short break. It's a good hole to jump in, fix something. They're back on the road again. So it's not about cruising around town. Robert Patrick isn't hanging out in just Hollywood. He's up in Hollister. He's all over. He's in Arizona. The guy puts miles on his bike. That's a fact.
Cool. I'd like to meet him someday.
Well, he'd be glad. You see him walk right up. He's that type of a guy.
Really?
Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. Bill, this is Jerry Kubicki.
Jerry, how are we doing?
Good. I just got home, and I got your message.
Okay, can everybody hang on for a second? This is Jerry, who's the chairman for San Diego Bikers Against Diabetes. Jerry, can you tell us what's going on this weekend quickly, and then I got to ask you something, okay?
Okay. We're doing Dealing for the Cure Poker Run. It's Saturday, March 26th. And sign-ups will be at Sweetwater Harley-Davidson. It'll be probably around a 60 or 70-mile ride ending at Barrett Junction Cafe. Now, rumor has it that Anastasia is going to make pancakes over at Sweetwater Harley-Davidson for those who come in to register. Registration's from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And it's $15 for donation per rider, $5 per passenger, and $5 per extra hand. And we got a bunch of prizes to give away. We got a high hand, low hand prizes, 50-50. And it's going to be a big event. It's being publicized very nicely.
How far from Nashville's the final destination out there in Barrett Lake Road out there in Delzura? How far is the mile? 100 miles, less, something?
No, it's probably around 70, 75 miles or so.
See, Charlie in Tennessee goes 200 miles, but I guess we're California people. We can only do 75.
Oh, come on. We're just keeping it local, that's why.
Jerry, what I want to talk to you about was I've been out talking to people. We want to bring in Illusion Motorcycles in June for the ride up there to the final ride, the big bad ride. We got two or three members of the Sons of Anarchy that said they'd like to come on in.
That would be wonderful.
And I got some more stuff going on. How do we feel about bringing the big? I cannot get the CCI big semi in because of monetary problems. They're saying, how do we feel about bringing the drag specialty big semi in?
I don't know. That I would need to talk to ADA office and find out more information. That I can't make a decision on.
Okay, because I don't know this lateness how much space we're going to have.
And we have another. This is Philip. We have another friend of ours that has a band, and they just want to play.
Well, we got the two bands. We got CCR, which is Creedence Clearwater Revised, I think it is, and then we got Leech Hooker from Stray Cats.
Yeah.
So we got the bands covered pretty well.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
I'm pretty sure we have a VIP party.
Let me know the first week, if you can, brother, about how much is going to cost the drag specialties if they bring their big semi in. It'd be good publicity for us, and we can build on this in the future. I just don't know the lateness, how much land we got still available. And also for any custom motorcycle shops that want to come in, what do we charge the custom motorcycle shops for a space in June?
Well, the vendor space is $250.
Okay.
For the tent. But what I would say is, Bill, we ought to do this off the air where, you know, anybody that wants to get in touch with me or with American Diabetes Association and deal directly with them as far as pricing and position and that type of thing goes. Because I'm not really handling the vendors.
Right.
But
see, I told them I'd let them know next week because I didn't know at this lateness we have so many people showing up. So we'll get back to that next week. You and I will talk and I'll talk to you.
Yeah. After the poker run, we can get in touch with Shay through ADA and find out what the situation is and find out about drag specialties and what's the best way of working. But there's some other people that are taking care of all that, Bill.
Well, drag specialties, again, we lost the CCI because I can't get them down there, but drag said that they have an interest in getting out in the field again, and I'd love to get that drag specialties big semi in, but I'll work on that one more time the first week, and then I'll hook them up with the diabetes people. We'll see where that goes on that. So we'll put that on the back burner.
Okay, well, let's put it on the warmer for right now, and then we'll move it up to the front stove after this week.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you on Saturday when I was down there in Del Zora about this here in person and all that, but I'm glad you called up. I want to keep expanding, but we'll talk about that some more, too. What time are you going to be down the event? Are you going to go right down to Anastasia's, or are you going out to Del Zora?
I'm going to be at Cycle Gear. That'll be the second stop, and there will be other stops. So I'll be there from about 9 o'clock in the morning. The registration's from 9 to 10, so a lot of people will be leaving right after registration, and then I'll be over at Barrett Junction later in the day. Probably
early afternoon?
I think most people will show up at Barrett Junction around 11:30, 12 o'clock, somewhere around there.
And what type of music? Do we have tape music? Or, I mean, do we have live band? Or what's going on there?
Well, we got your friend that did your event, Woody. Is it Woody?
Woody, what type of music? Oh, I know that. I know. Yes, I'm sorry. Now, come on, give
he
me credit.
He did your event, Wally.
Wally
World.
A year. What the hell is he talking about? I know Woody. I know. Okay, I got you. Good.
No, not Woody. Good. Wally.
I don't know. Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, so he played some really good music. We were very impressed with him.
Good.
You know, you just have to remember one thing. You know, Bill's birthday was last week, and he's another year older now. And sometimes his memory's as long as his Johnson.
You can't be in as many events as I am without getting it all blown in together somehow.
Well, happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
But that's okay. I think most of us have what is called the disease CRS.
That could be it, yep.
I was going to do a bike ride for it, but I forgot all about it.
That's cute.
So what else is going on? I just got in, and I've never done this before, done the blog.
Well, so exactly, Screwdriver, how many people are listening? How many countries? Give him an idea.
What is that?
Hang on. Bill wants me to update you on
it. Is this kind of like the Dave Stahl show where he has about six people listening?
No.
Dave will kill me for that one.
Don't pick on Dave.
Right now, on the United States. You can read it, Bill.
Go ahead, read it, Bill. Right here, we have 123.
Where?
Right here, the U.S. Canada, 11,719. Germany, 7,600. We got Australia, 5,600 and change. Brazil, 4,300 and change. Denmark, 3,700 and change. South Korea, 3,246. United Kingdom, we got almost 3,000. France got 2,029. Zealand, 1,012 people.
Wow.
You know, there's people listening. What's good about the show is that they're in different time zones. People tune in and we're, wait, a couple more. You got to hear this. Finish it up there, brother.
We even have we have two guys in the Philippines, one guy in Brazil, and one guy in Poland.
Well, let me say something. The ride that we're doing, this is a poker run for Rip's Bad Ride. And Bill knows all about Rip better than I do. But the purpose of this is to raise money for diabetes. And you don't have to actually be on the ride. So if they want to go to the, ripsbadride.com, they could do a donation because we'd love to get rid of this disease. We'd love to find a cure for it. And it affects millions of people. So if you got so many people all around the world, if a few of them will just get on the internet, go to ripsbadride.com and do a donation, that would be absolutely great because we'd love to raise. My goal since I started this is I'd like to see us raise $1 million.
You know, when Shapiro and I are speaking at different hog chapters and all that, I always ask everybody in the room, do you know somebody on diabetes? Do you have a relative on diabetes? Do you have a friend? Everybody in the room raises their hand because it affects every single one of us, our parents, our children, our friends. This is a disease that goes across all boundaries. It strikes. It's deadly. If there's any way we can stop this, it'd be so tremendous in our lifetime. Not necessarily for me. I got a few years on me. I'm good to go. But to me, to think that my grandchildren could grow up free of diabetes, that'd mean an awful lot to me, and certainly a lot of other grandparents too, I'm sure.
Bill, I'll say something else, and you've heard this story before. Except for this year, I've been doing a bike ride for MS, multiple sclerosis. And I started out because I just enjoyed bicycle riding. It's a 100-150-mile bicycle ride. And we became a top fundraising team, and we started raising money. And our team became a catalyst to raise more and more money. Well, they've raised for the last couple of years like $2.3 million every year for MS. 7 years ago, I found out my niece has MS. The medicine that she's taking right now wasn't even invented when I started doing the ride. So we look at things and we say, well, we're just one person. We can't help a whole lot. Maybe I'll give a little donation. But everybody is really important. And if everybody get together and, like I said, raise a little bit of money for diabetes each, we can get up to $1 million, and that's research that will go towards diabetes, and as you say, hopefully we can find a cure for it, that I don't have to do this anymore, and that we can save a lot of people. So I think it's a very worthwhile cause. That's why I do it. I don't even have diabetes. My mom did, but I'm doing it because I want to, you know, I want to help.
You know, I've been doing this for so many years. I made an announcement. I was on stage last year that I got diabetes now. I don't have to take the needle, but I got it's a little stupid pill I got to take every day. I've been doing this so long, and I have it now, as many, many Americans do. So I feel I'm doing twofold. I'm helping myself, but I'm not really concerned about myself. Again, I've had a good life, but if I can think that my grandchildren can grow up free of this disease, that'd mean an awful lot to me. It's always the future with me, always the children.
Well, if they go to the website, they want to donate to me. My name is Jerry Kubicki. They can donate to Wendell Perry or Bart Perry or Chuck Marsh. If they want to put a writer's name down and do a donation, that would be absolutely wonderful. My goal this year is to raise money for diabetes, and if your listeners would be willing to go Rip's Bad Ride, and it's $5, $10, whatever they can spare. I know things are tight, but whatever they can spare, if we can raise, $500,000, $1 million to fight this disease, that would be absolutely wonderful, especially with the audience that you have. So hopefully they really feel strong about this.
California, and you people are in different states, you're in different countries. This is not about just helping California people. If we can find the cure, it's worldwide. It's all of your grandchildren we're trying to save. It's worldwide.
If you could send me a flyer, if you call Bill tomorrow, I'll give him my email address. And send me a flyer, and I'll put it up, because we see Wendell a week ago.
Yeah.
And I gave him a card, and I'm still waiting for the flyer.
Okay.
For the June party?
Yeah. For the June party.
Okay. What you can do is, let me give you my email.
Go for it.
Send it to, excuse me for my cough. Jerry,
next thing we're working on the cure for the cough, right after we get the diabetes.
Yeah.
You hang in there, buddy. We'll get the diabetes cured, then we'll get the cough cured, all right?
Okay. Send it to Jerry at summittransmissions.com. SummitTransmissions.com. And
okay.
If you send that with what you want, I'll get it out to you.
Okie dokie.
And anybody else that needs flyers or any information, send it to me. I'll do it as fast as I can.
And then we're down to about 5 minutes, and I would like to extend the invitation to you, maybe not next week, but the following week or whatever, up until this event in June, to you can call back at any time.
Intermittently, keep us abreast of what's going on, some of the upgrades and all that maybe, okay, buddy?
I would be glad to. Thank you guys so much, and thank you for allowing me to speak a little bit.
We want you to be a regular member of this. We got to push this event. And no matter how loud the noise is, the people have to hear this. Again, I said this, you know, I'm good to go in my life, but if I think we can do something to save our grandchildren, our children, honest to God, that's the whole world to me.
That's great. Thank you guys so much. I'll see you later.
See you
Saturday,
right?
Bill.
Saturday,
okay, we'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay,
right.
Bill.
And then we're gonna close this out. I want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in and listening. We're gonna play a song from Charlie Baker right now. This one's called Indian River, and it's gonna take us out tonight.
Wait, but I didn't hear. What's the name of the song again?
Indian River.
Indian River. Okay.
Indian River.
I haven't heard that one.
Okay. And Charlie, if you're listening, this one's for you, buddy. Water, taking those gallon jugs.
Charlie.
Yeah, I just told Charlie I'll be wearing my tan. He said I'll be wearing Sonya's thong, ding dong.
You know what you two got going on? I don't think the rest of us want to hear this. I do want to take a moment and thank all of our friends for tuning in tonight.
You
know?
I do too.
Keep us informed what you're doing. Remember, sharing information, that's called dialogue. This is the last bastion of America. 10 seconds. Freedom to everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.